The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by nobody. Just me, my own. So apparently, Paddy's in Belgium. Steve's in Malta. Pete's in the West Wales. I'm in Chandler's Ford. Let me just remind you guys, I know you're listening to this, okay? There is internet in Belgium and West Wales. Steve is given a pass because he's working. House of Streams, check it out. It's like all these gamers in Malta in a Big Brother style sort of setup there. But Paddy and Pete, you have no excuse. Half an hour. Half an hour on the podcast for a chat. That's all I'm asking for of your time. And in return, I'll give you some shares, you know, some advice, and those shares will go down in value. Okay? That's all I'm asking for. Okay. But there's so much news out. I've never done this before on my own weekend podcast. But there's so much news out that I wanted to actually talk about something because I like talking. I like financial news. So let's start. So looking at the macro this week, do you know what annoys me? Rishi Sunak. And that speech he made at that distribution centre in the week, you know, where he came on smiling, like, you know, and using his hands in front of him. That's fake. But he said, you know, he understands people will feel anxiety following interest rates hikes, adding that he's 100% on it and it's going to be okay. What's he talking about? He's 100% on it, and it's going to be okay. How is he on it 100%? First of all, that is a lie. He is not on it 100%. He does other things. He goes to the toilet. He makes himself food, or someone else makes him food, probably. But he's not 100% on it, you know? There's other things he's talking about. And also, if he's on it, what is he doing? It's inflation. He can't do anything. But also, it's going to be okay. It's not going to be okay. There's a lot of people who can't afford to pay their mortgages and rents. I'm not saying that's Rishi's fault, but it's not going to be okay for them. You know, there are, for example, if you're renting off someone, a buy-to-let landlord, and their mortgage goes up, they have to put the rent up. If you can't afford the rent, how are you on it, Rishi? 100%. I don't understand that. It's going to be okay. Is it? If you're turfed out, is it okay? Well, do you know what? If you are turfed out, you're probably not listening to this, but if you are turfed out, go and knock on number 10. Say, Rishi, you said it's going to be okay? You've got plenty of spare bedrooms in there. Please, can I come and stay with you? Because you're 100% on it, yeah? He's 100% on drugs by the sound of it. What's he talking? It's complete fakery. And do you know what? The more Rishi, I don't know if Rishi, sounds too familiar. The more Sunak pretends to be one of the people, the more disingenuous he seems. Because he's not one of the people. He's not at all. He's from a very privileged background. He's one of the elite. He's a multi-millionaire. Nothing wrong with that. You know, I applaud people who do well in business. I really do. But when he pretends he's one of the people, it's more disingenuous than it is. Just say it as it is, Rishi. Just say, you know. Because he's pretending, he's sharing in the cost of living crisis. That is fake. He just needs to be honest. And the more he pretends to be one of the people, the more fake he is. This doesn't work out. He just needs to be honest with people. Say, listen, I've never had problems paying the rent or finding money for food or paying the heating. But I can imagine, well, I can only imagine how hard that would be. I'm going to try my best to help people out like this in this situation because it's literally a situation of misery. You know, when you're constantly thinking where to find money to pay the rent, mortgage, all that stuff, then it is a miserable existence. It dominates your thoughts. And Rishi's saying he's on it. It's going to be okay. It's complete fakery. It doesn't do him any favours. And also one other thing, him saying that inflation is a global issue. Yes, it is. But the UK has the worst inflation of all G7 countries, these are the most sort of developed countries in the world. The worst. You know, we are 8.7%. There's countries in America at 4% and 5%, 6% in the Eurozone. We're at 8.7%. And the Bank of England has raised rates by half a percentage point, rather than a quarter, to put interest rates up to 5%. So why doesn't he address, why is the UK suffering from the biggest inflation, the highest inflation in the G7 countries? Why isn't he addressing that? Address the truth. Just be honest. Why can't politicians be honest? Why is Rishi, an elite, pretend to be one of the people? I'm on it 100%. It's going to be okay. What are you talking about? It's going to be okay. Say that to someone who's just, you know, been turfed out because they can't afford to pay their rent. It's not okay for them, Rishi. Stop talking rubbish platitudes that hold no substance whatsoever. It's so fake. I did have hope for Rishi. I really did. Anyway, talking about this, right? They reckon that if the markets are right, UK interest rates are heading for 6 to 6.25% at the beginning of 2024 and staying there for almost a year. Levels not seen since 1998. Now, they're not speaking like saying, oh, listen, I had a mortgage in the 80s when interest rates were 15%. Yeah, but the difference is then, and I saw the stat, and it's quite startling. Back then, the average mortgage was about 4-5 times your wages. Right now, it's a 10 to 11 times your wage, your annual wage. So it's a lot more expensive. And also, we've gone through a period of very low interest. And that means people have taken a bit of debt, stretched themselves. Whether it's right or wrong, who knows? But when you have years and years of low interest rates, people do take advantage of free money. Now, whose fault was that? It certainly, you know, it wasn't the people who were... Why could you blame someone to take advantage of a cheap mortgage, cheap money? You can't. The stock markets do. Everyone does. So that's the problem with the central banks. Why did they ever put interest rates below a certain level? If their target rates are like 2% inflation, you know, interest rates 2%, keep them at that. Don't go below that. It sounds simplistic, but why put it almost next to nothing? Because they have fueled quantitative easing and reducing interest rates has fueled this boom. It's a central bank's problem. And you get Andrew Bailey standing up there telling people not, you know, raise the wages and all this stuff when he's on like 800 grand a year or 400 grand a year, whatever he's on. Mate, people can't afford things. Stop telling people to increase their wages. Everything's gone up in price. Everything. I don't know, it's these people, the elites. They're so out of touch. Now, if it does go up to, you know, 6.25%, that'll be a lot of pain. And you know what? I can't see that happening. Hopefully, the Bank of England are not out of touch. That they don't, because that will push the economy towards... We are headed towards recession. Without a shadow of a doubt, we're headed towards recession, right? But this will push us into a deeper recession, I think. If they don't put the interest rates down, when the economy starts to really slow, they will make it worse. And do you know what? I have no confidence in them actually easing up on interest rates because they're so far out of touch and behind the curve. They created this problem. They are now going headlong into another problem they'll create, and they'll be too late to stop it happening. Okay, so banks and building societies apparently will offer more flexibility to struggling mortgage holders as rates soar. So Jeremy Hunt's been meeting with a couple of the mortgage bods. I did see a picture of the Barclays guy and the lady from Virgin Money. They met in Dowsett. And you can apparently change your mortgage terms temporarily, but they were able to return the original deal within 6 months. By the way, how is this affecting the markets? The AIM All share has closed at 767, down, this is on Friday, 0.8%. And let me just check. I look at the FTSE, 5 days down in a row. The FTSE. But AIM is pretty much the same. By the way, we are now below the low in October. The market sold off in October. That was the low. So 767 on the Imall share is below the low, which was 775 in October. The Imall share now is down 42% below its all-time high, which was 656 days ago. So I did initially thought maybe we retest those lows. Sometimes we have to retest them by going a little bit lower, but it's never good to have a lower low. And generally, if you look at indices and markets, we see these three-month cycles that happen. It'll rally, it'll come off, rally, come off, three months. Whether it's going down or up, you see down for the three-month cycle, and then it'll be a little rally. But you may get a series of lower highs. This is quite worrying now. We're now below the previous low. Where does it go? How far does it go? A lot of stocks have taken a hammering. But I do think this is either the low or there's one more after this. I think there's probably one more after this. Because when you think you've had the pain, there's always more pain to come in the markets. Always. And, you know, I'm largely sitting on 40% cash in my portfolio. But even so, it doesn't feel comfortable. You know, it's not easy, not nice seeing your portfolio value just erode. Listen, if you hold shares and you believe the company's going to come back, it doesn't erode, but it's still very painful. By the way, at the end of this macro rant here, there is one bit of positive news. So even though CPI, which is the Consumer Price Index, came in unchanged at 8.7%, when it was forecast to come in at 8.4%, the PPI, which is the Producer Price Index, is telling a bit of a different story. Now, the Producer Price Index measures a change in input prices of raw, semi-finished or finished goods and services. It's a good indicator. It's a feed-in to the rest of the economy, basically. It's a good indicator of the future inflation. And it dropped. So PPI dropped by 1.5%. And it was predicted to come in at 0.5%. So three times. It dropped three times as much as predicted. That is the biggest drop since lockdown in 2020 when things were shut down. But that's a good sign that maybe the next CPI read may come down to the one after, because obviously there's a lag. But that's a good sign, a forward-looking sign. So I did a survey on Twitter. Do the Bank of England know what they're doing? 21.1% or 21.2% of people said yes. 78.8% said no. But it just makes you think, isn't it? That's why I wrote that. Do they know what at the end of the day, they want to get inflation down, because countries with rampant inflation, of course, is misery. And they have this very... They've got two... People say they've really only got one instrument. They've got two, really. But the main one they use is interest rates. So if they make everything more expensive, people buy less, producers produce less, there's less supply, less demand. Less demand, essentially. So prices come down. And in fact, looking at Brent crude, actually, very good indicator of future recessions. That, I think yesterday, Friday, was it hit a low of 72. It bounced up a little bit, but around about $72, just below $73 a barrel. So we are, if they tell you they're not forcing a recession, they're lying. The only way to get inflation down is a recession, is subdued economic activity. That's the only way to get prices down, is to reduce demand completely. And a recession does that. So people are going to hurt. Okay, let's look at some company news. Hang on. It's 5:30 in the morning, Saturday morning, by the way, and I'm recording this, so I've got a bit of coffee here to keep me fired up. So company news. One of the companies I own is called Good Energy. Ticker Good. Quite like that. It's a good ticker, that. But they announced they acquired Wessex Eco Energy, which is an established UK-based solar installation business, for initial consideration of £2.5 million. This is less than six times EBITDA multiple, based on forecast 2023 earnings. So Wessex Eco Energy, the revenue for the year to 31st of October 2023 remains on track to exceed £4 million. this is quite good. If you look at the detail, for the financial year to the end of October, previously, 2022, it's not 2023, was 2.2. That's good growth. From 2.2 million to 4 million shows you how fast the solar installation business is growing. So not only have they grown from 2.2 to 4 million in a year, but their net profit in 2022 was 300,000. That's a net margin of 14%. That's very good margin. And in fact, that's what good energy needs, improving, acquiring businesses with better margins, because their margins are a little bit thin, but their top line is huge. So they say the acquisition is expected to be marginally EPS accretive in the first full year of ownership and materially accretive in the year ending 31st December 2025. That's good. In a trading statement, they said the business has performed more strongly than planned in the first 5 months of the year. Profit in the first half will be higher than expected, driven by falling and less volatile wholesale commodity costs. So there we are. As expected, the second half will be loss-making, given the interplay between hedge prices of power and gas and the current falling market prices. So they've obviously hedged a bit higher than the current fall in price, which is also a good thing for inflation, you see. Commodity prices are coming down. Like I said, oil is coming down. But it's also, they didn't know that. So you'll get this. A lot of companies who hedge, commodity prices will have hedged a little higher because commodity prices have fallen. But it's better to have a hedging position, because if it goes against you, if commodity prices go higher and you haven't hedged, you're paying more. But anyway, they said cash and restricted deposits at the end of May increased to 38 million. This is up from 24 million. They said, following strong profit performance and the timing of customer support receipts under the government support schemes, at this point in time, the board's expectations for the full year remain unchanged. Now, they've got 38 million in cash. Some of that is restricted, right? But their market cap is 29 million. Their market cap is 9 million below the cash they have. That'll come down, of course. They probably can wind down. But nevertheless, it's going to be close to market cap in cash. Now, they're profitable. In my mind, they're a hot sector, which is, green energy tariffs, then solar, heat pumps, all this kind of stuff, support services, the eco industry, the net zero industry. And listen to the forecast. So 2022, okay, top line, £248 million and 4.9 of EBITDA. Next year, or this year coming, £310 million top line with 5 million of EBITDA. Of course, the margins are thinner, but the margins will be getting better as they acquire these businesses with better margins. Because this has gone through a transition, this company. They used to own sort of, assets like wind farms, which had a lot of debt with them. But they've sold those off, cleared most of the debt, and now they're going for an energy services company, which is a higher margin business. And they've got about 270,000 customers. So they can, and these are almost first generation, eco-friendly people who believe in net zero. They've been there for a long time. Good Energy is one of the original companies that started out very early on the net zero pledge. And so they've got a lot of people really committed to it. So it's an easy sell. But if you look at this, so they're saying 2023, forecast to 310 million. 5 million EBITDA. Now, their market cap is 29 million. Net cash of 17 million. So their enterprise value is 12 million. That's an EV EBITDA of 2.5 times. That is cheap. In a growing sector, lots of cash. And that's why I like this company. That's why I got into it. I think they can't get any cheaper. The chart just rolled over with a downturn generally in AIM stocks. Like I said, they are 29 million market cap. That's why I like them. But they have plenty of cash to acquire good bolt-on acquisitions that will complement their current business. Okay, company news on Trufin. Trufin have raised $7 million to fund future franchise of Mortal Shell. This is part of PlayStack, of course. They're one of the gaming arm. They did it pretty much at very little discount. That's because their shareholder register are very supportive and they've got an excellent stat. That's also worth looking at. When you look at microcap companies, check out the shareholder register. Is there institutional backing there? Because if a company needs to raise money, then they can go to their, you know, holders, the current significant holders, and ask them for support. I was going to say tap them up. And tap them up. All right. Oi, chuck us a couple of million, yeah? But no, you know, ask them for further support. That's a nice way of putting it, isn't it? It's tapping up. Oi, mate, chuck us a couple of million, yeah? We're going to buy this franchise, yeah? All right. Thanks, mate. But anyway, the company is pleased to announce they've signed a licensing and publishing agreement with Cole Symmetry, who are the publishers of Mortal Shell. Mortal Shell was a very big hit game. And they said they are anticipating significant demand for Mortal Shell 2. And there may even be Mortal Shell 3. So Mortal Shell 1 has a gameplay of 10 hours, has sold more than 1 million units to date, retailing at $29.99. So remember those figures. 8 to 10 hours of gameplay, retailing at $30 before promotions. Mortal Shell has generated more than 15 million of gross revenue for PlayStack, including 4 million in platform deals, guaranteed income from major technology platforms in exchange for free content distribution to their subscribers. And the net income from Mortal Shell 1 to PlayStack was 6.7 million, so that's, you know, profit. Mortal Shell 2's gameplay will exceed 30 hours, so that's three times as much as Mortal Shell 1, and expect the retail between $40 and $50. So literally, more expensive than the first one, and more game to play. And they're saying, based on the success of Mortal Shell during its lifetime, Mortal Shell 2 sales are expected to significantly exceed 1 million Mortal Shell units sold. Mortal Shell had a net game margin greater than 44% and a return on equity in excess of 600%. That's a good return on equity, 600%. Mortal Shell 2 is expected to contribute significantly to PlayStack's revenues in the year ending 2026. So it's a while yet, but there are games coming out this year with PlayStack. That's the thing. If you are a publisher of games, all you need is one hit, one big hit to that, and then you do a franchise, do follow-ups. Because if you're building a support base from a get-go, standstill, it's very hard, you know? But Mortal Shell was a hit, a big hit. Like I said, 1 million units it sold. That's a big hit. And already now you've got a fan base of 1 million people chomping at the bit for Mortal Shell 2. They're there. They'll sign up straight away, those guys. And the price will go up better. So it'll only build. They're just going to improve it, that's all. So, you know, if it's better, it's a plus. But even if it's the same, they've got almost 1 million customers ready to go. So that's good. And they also announced a trading update. Stargo Q1 revenues, this is a Q1, increased by more than 250% over the same period to no less than $500,000. So I'm assuming, because Stargo did about 2.2 million for the year last year. They're only starting to build now, of course, deals with Lloyd's and Sage, two FTSE 100 companies. So I'm assuming, you know, Q1 is the quiet quarter. Because I reckon they'll beat last year. Auction Q1 revenues increased over the same period by over 20% to no less than 1.35 million. Virtus Q1 revenues increased over the same period in 2020 by more than 100% to 800,000. And PlayStack revenues increased by the same period by more than 9% to no less than 950,000 pounds. But the release schedule of high quality mobile and console games gives the board confidence that H2 2023, that's this year, will see a marked increase in revenues as PlayStack targets positive EBITDA and operating cash generation in 2023. So yeah, it's very seasonal. I mean, it depends how many games you release, of course, for PlayStack, but they're saying they've released some games this year and revenue will start to come through in H2. And by the way, group revenue, 3.6 million for Q1, a 44% increase on the same period in 2022. Okay, so they are up on, that's a good sign, especially by that amount. So you assume the last three quarters of the year will improve a lot more. They have unrestricted cash as of the 30th of April of 2.6 million. Now, these are the forecasts for Truefin, and there was no update on any notes since. So sales for 2023, last year was 16.1. They're saying sales for 2023, 29.7. So that's over 100% up. For 2024, 41 or 42 million. And then 2024, 51 million. So excellent growth there. And profitable pretty much in 2024 and building in 2025. They're looking at profit before tax, 2024, 600,000, and over 5 million in 2025. But I think, Satago is the one, PlayStack is the one, but you've got two, it's almost like the sexy and the sensible. Satago and PlayStack are the sexy, with lots of sexy upside. Auction and Virtus are the sensible. They're not going to blow it off, blow the hinges off, blow the doors off, but very predictable revenue and lots of visibility going forward. And that's why Auction had, an offer of 26 million was turned down. And finally, Plarium. Let's take a drink of coffee. Plarium Imaging has appointed Christopher Von Jacko, Dr. Von Jacko in brackets. Dr. Von Jacko. Hang on, let's have a drink of coffee. So they've appointed Dr. Von Jacko as Chief Executive Officer and Director of the company, effective immediately. Dr. Von Jacko succeeds Richard Hullahan. I liked Richard a lot. He's quite a nice guy. And he's done a lot for Plarium. I don't know why he's been let go. I still think it was maybe the mess up on the FDA, where they changed manufacturer, and the FDA maybe were aware of that, but they hadn't had new measurements or details or data from the new manufacturer. I don't know. Maybe the commercialization is... Well, saying that, we thought it was going slower. Now they've signed with Philips. That's taken a while to do that. So behind the scenes, it's been going on for a while. Anyway, Richard will be retiring and will be stepping down as director of the company, effective immediately. Mr. Hullahan will assist the company in transitional period for the next 6 months. And so this is Dr. Von Jacko, and I'm questioning this a little bit. He says, with 30 years of global healthcare leadership experience, Dr. Von Jacko has led both private and publicly listed businesses with a proven track record in commercialization. So that there is in bold, pretty much, in my head. This is about commercialization now, commercializing, Plarium. Which, of course, it is. We've gone through FDA approval. So it's now time for the sales to hit the road. For the tyres to hit the tarmac. So he'll say he's, while developing and executing sound business and operating strategies, he has experience across a multitude of healthcare sectors, including radiology, pulmonology, and various surgical interventions. In his most recent executive position, Dr. Von Jacko served as president and CEO of BrainsWay, from 2020 to 2023. I'm going to look at the chart of BrainsWay, okay? B-Way. 2020 to 2023. Okay. I've got that chart there. And this is a global leader in advanced, non-invasive neurostimulation treatments for mental health disorders. At BrainsWay, he launched 5 key differentiated products, obtained numerous reimbursement coverage, and executed on equity investment with a follow-on raise of over $45 million comprised of top-tier US medtech investors. That may be the case. And you know what? From a company perspective, raising money when you're obviously pre-revenue or a new company is good news. But for current investors, of course, it's a little bit of a kick in the ghoulies or a punch in the belly for ladies. Because it dilutes your holding and there's some churn. But looking at the chart of BrainsWay, okay, from 2020 to 2023. So I can see it in 2020, January 2023, it was at $12.50. Current share price? $2.30. So, what's happening with the commercialization there then? If you take it from, it was IPO at $11, but he's taken it from $12.50 to $2.30. Okay, listen, I mean, we are in a bear market, I suppose, but not from January 2020. So it went from $12.50 all the way down to $5.70, back up to almost 12. $5.70 was in November 2020, back up to 11.8 in June 2022, and since then, it's literally gone down from literally $8 to $2. It did hit $2 recently in May, and it's starting to rally a bit. So, okay, that's Brainsway. Let's forgive him that. It's the bear market. Let's go. And so I said, prior to this, Dr. Von Jacko, CEO of Dynatronics, NASDAQ, DYNT, a medical device company providing restorative products to accelerate optimal health, from 2018 to 2019, where he developed a new growth strategy focused on driving sales, business development, and proactive investor relations. Okay, I look forward to that. I should be driving sales, absolutely, and business development. So let's look at Dynatronics chart, shall we? It's DYNT. When was he there? 2018-2019. He's been there for 1 year. What? 1 year. Let's have a look at 2018-2019. Okay. All right. Okay. So, 2018. Okay. Share price was at $13.73. Okay. And then it went sideways to $13.60 to 2000. Oh, hang on. No. Are you kidding me? It went from $16 pretty much in 2018 to the end of 2019, went to $3. $16 to $3. So as far as I'm concerned, in both companies I looked at now, they're listed. The share price has been decimated by Dr. Von Jacko. I'm not saying it's just him, but he was stewarding the ship then. So I don't know. I'm not sure about this guy. I mean, the good thing is, Plarium share price is at the bottom already, pretty much, hopefully. You know, it's world-beating tech, and it's worth 50 million. So I don't know, I hope he doesn't take this down, but this is, this to me, do you know what, it's like, just check the charts out. Did the company do due diligence and say, where's the share price in these companies? They haven't gone up. They've gone down. Massively down. So I'm not confident so far in Dr. Von Jacko. Let's see what he does. But anyway, he's been given, how much? 5.3 million stock options to participate in the share option plan. 25% of the share options will vest on the 20th of June 2024. So we can start cashing these in. Well, at least, well, I'm assuming he's getting a wage as well. Next year. With the remaining share options vesting in equal portions on the last day of each calendar month of the period of 36 months, starting on the 31st of July. So you can, in the quarter of them, you can sort of take up in June next year. Subject to, that's worth 1.5 million, those share options. Let's see, Dr. Von Jacko, what you can do with the Plarium share price, okay? Because so far, in your last two listed companies, it hasn't been good. You know what I'm saying? Just finally, please check out my YouTube channel. I've released quite a few videos the last few weeks. I had a bit of a break from YouTube. And then they sent me an email saying, you're losing your advertising thing on there. So, okay. I didn't earn any money off there anyway, really. But I thought, I'd better start doing it again. It's good practice to, you know, get into researching companies, writing them in a format that's presentable. The last one I did, actually, was Invinity Energy Systems, which are vanadium flow batteries, of course. And a lot of people, you know, says, well, listen, when, you know, the sun shines and the wind doesn't blow, or the other way around, sorry, when the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow, you can't generate energy. But a lot of time it does. But the trouble is, if you don't use that energy straight away that's generated by renewables, where does it go? It's wasted. It's gone. Which is ridiculous. It's, you know, huge waste. It's very wasteful. So you have to store it. And where do we store it? largely batteries. Now, there's a bit of a battle between lithium-ion batteries and vanadium flow batteries. Vanadium is more available than copper. You know, it's very readily available. But the initial capex of vanadium batteries are a bit more expensive. But they have a life cycle of 20, 25 years. Lithium-ion doesn't. They have a life cycle that starts degrading after 5 years. So over the lifetime of the vanadium flow battery, it's cheaper to have vanadium flow. And if you're talking about recycling, a sustainable economy, you'd think they're the better things. Now, Invinity are, and not only that, lithium-ion are quite dangerous as well. They can catch fire when you stack them high and they get really hot. So, because vanadium flow is in liquid. So they are bigger, vanadium flow, and they're a bit more expensive, but they last longer and they're safer. And of course, because of that, they're more sustainable. And so they play into the whole, you know, eco-friendly thing. And Invinity are pretty much the number one supplier of these batteries. And there's they are at an inflection point right now because they are about to come out with their next generation of battery, which will knock competitors out of the park. And this is done in conjunction with Siemens Gamesa, which is one of the big wind turbine producers. In fact, there's a little bit of an issue with their turbines the last couple of days. They've got a deep issue with some of their turbines. But anyway, they're a massive player in that area, and they've got to sort of hook up with those. And they're going to be releasing their new, they're doing pilot tests first, this new sort of generational battery. Pilot tests this year, commercial launch 2024, which will be a game changer for them. They had 15 million of cash recently. They are burning quite a bit of cash at the moment, but they've got enough to get to H2 2024, so over a year of cash. And then that's when commercialization of this new generation battery kicks in, hopefully. So it's a very interesting company, worth checking out anyway. IES is ticker. That's it. Listen, please do your own research. Thanks for listening. Speak you next to Wiki. Oh, yeah. Paddy, Pete and Steve. See? Didn't need you, did I? Well, I did a bit. I felt a bit lonely.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.